Welcome to the Arlington Street Church podcast. Founded in 1729, Arlington Street continues today as a gathering place for progressive people of faith in the greater Boston area and beyond. We are located at the corner of Arlington and Boylston Streets, across from the Public Garden in Boston, Massachusetts. Please visit ascboston.org for more information about this historic Unitarian Universalist congregation. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.
Our reading this morning is called Lament Psalm 32 by Ann Weems. O God, explain to me the cruelty of your world. Make sense of those who make no sense. Tell me why the innocent die and evil people live to kill again. Tell me why the faithful are shunned and the self-righteous point their fingers. Tell me why the wounded are wounded and sorrow falls on the shoulder of sorrow. Tell me why the abused are abused and the victims victimized. Tell me why the rains come to the drowning and aftershocks follow earthquakes. O God, is this any way to run a world? O merciful one, let us rest between tragedies. Speak to us, for we are your people. Speak to us of hope for the hopeless and love for the unloved and homes for the homeless and dignity for the dying and respect for the disdained. Speak to us, O God, of the resurrected one. Speak to us of hope. For in spite of the tidal wave of tears, we remember your story of new life. Tell the world again, O God of creation. Tell us that winter will fade and spring will wash us new and the world will green again. And we will be new creations in the garden of God. Free us from these tentacles of sorrow and we will fall on our faces and worship you. O God of goodness, O God of a new green world. Oh, my people, what a week it has been. Since the time changed last Sunday, we have witnessed what feels like a change in our times, or at least our understanding of them. The poem you just heard was written by a poet and Presbyterian elder who composed a whole book of her own laments based on those in the Hebrew Bible. Now, unlike our poet, you may not be prone to call out to God as the direction for your sorrow and grief, but I invite you to consider this morning the widest possible understanding of God, like the one offered by Bob Hickok in our opening words. The possibility that zero gave birth to the universe, that all our somethings came from nothing, the fear of being alone, that children of chance, orphans down to our atoms, is mother to the idea of God. God is the dress we slip over solitude. God, I think, is a nickname for that creative, life-sustaining energy, that mystery that fuels all that is, a metaphor for all that's beyond our understanding, a place where we can shout our fears and our hopes and believe they might be heard. So whatever name you give or choose not to give, let's say that there are times when our human need for another being to whom we might address our concerns is a valid need. And let's also say that we've been trained in Western culture that we have to make sense, logical sense, of our beliefs or the direction of our yearnings, or they're not valid. But there are times. There are times, my friends, when we need to cry out our pain, our fear, our longing for justice in a world that seems bent on its own destruction. And for that, we have this ancient practice of lamentation, which, it turns out, has a specific shape and form. It begins with turning to God, naming our confusion, our exhaustion, our disappointment, Oh God, explain to me the cruelty of your world. And then it gives us this delicious opportunity to do what many of us have been told we ought not to do from the time we were children, and certainly not as adults. We get to flat out complain. Here we get to candidly name what is wrong. We hold nothing back. Tell me why the innocent die and evil people live to kill again. Tell me why. Tell me why. Tell me why. What in the world are you up to, holy, ineffable mystery? Seriously, what gives? We are allowed the audacity to question, to lash out, to name what we see without trying to dress it up or make it nice. So I'd like to invite you this morning, just while we're all here together. You want to try it out? Think of a sound you would make or a word you want to shout to the God you may or may not believe in for whatever you are lamenting this week. Keep it PG, friends, there are children present. No, seriously, think of it. And when I say go, I want you to shout as loudly as you can. Zoomers too, I don't care who's in your house. Sound you would make or a word you want to shout to that God you may or may not believe in. Ready? Go. How did that feel? Now, once we've voiced our complaining, we ask for deliverance. Oh, merciful one, let us rest between tragedies. Speak to us, for we are your people. Speak to us, speak to us, speak to us. We want to know how to keep our faith, how to trust again, how to understand this in light of the hope and promise we have felt in other times. Tell the world again, O God of creation, tell us that winter will fade and spring will wash us new. And then we return to a trust in whatever it is that's beyond us to deliver on some possibility and goodness we cannot yet see. God of goodness of a green new world. Now that return to trust can be shaky when we're still in the midst of our complaining. We're angry with you, Holy One, but we know you can do better. Or we know that we don't see the full picture of what's to come, so we'll give you a pass this time, for now. Or the return to trust can be a true expression of letting go, a way to say, we've been in despair before and we've lived into the surprise of a new day of hope, seen that new green world, and so we will trust again in all we do not know. Turn to God, complain. Ask for what you need. Trust. A simple formula for grief and for a faith that can get us through. Now it's tempting, knowing many of the privileges many of us enjoy, not to let ourselves grieve too much. There's work to be done, we say, and what can I do, and what comes next? All of these are expressions of our sense of responsibility and our need for agency in the midst of a sense of powerlessness. And yes, there is work to be done, and there are things we can do. But when we leap to action to avoid the grief, we can also do real harm. If we skip the lamentation in our yearning to feel in control again, we're not allowing ourselves to learn anything from the problem in front of us. We're just grasping for control in the same system that made the injustice in the first place. Sar Mugwira, a chaplain at Baylor College of Nursing, writes that lament is disruptive because it signals that the way things are is broken. Lament upsets the status quo, hence the dominant avoid it. Now, that is not to say that everyone who feels ready and in get-to-work mode at this moment is failing at lamentation. We each move through these cycles at our own pace, so the last thing I'm encouraging is another way for us to judge each other. If you're moving into let's get to work and your neighbor is in deep grief, you both may very well be doing the right thing. And you can probably find courage and strength from one another. Neither state is permanent. Honor the crying out and honor the moving anew. Support one another. The last thing we need is for our alarm and panic over our different needs and choices to alienate us from each other. That's exactly what brought us here. But after the turning, after the complaining and the asking, there is that thing that is sometimes the hardest, trust. How long, O Lord? I and maybe many of you have cried out as we've worked our hardest for a cause only to see it defeated or diluted. Returning to trust in a longer trajectory of history, a vision beyond what we can understand, a meaning and a purpose that might, maybe, be lent to this current suffering. All of that can feel like a very tall order. When it comes to that trust, to that letting go of our own need to see and map the future, and to have faith that our work and our prayer and our turning is worthwhile, I find it helpful to turn again to the poets and the prophets. I was reminded this week that in 1962, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was ready to throw in the towel. For a moment, he was ready to turn in the towel, believing that his work for racial and economic justice was doomed. He had spent 2 years leading organizing in Albany, Georgia, only to be thwarted by some, if I may say it, dirty double-crossing by the civic leaders there that ultimately squashed their efforts entirely. We have all of Dr. King's inspirational speeches to look to, but he issued a great lament at that discouraging failure. And yet, he continued, with the support and strength of his fellow movement leaders and, of course, his God. Where would we be if he had stopped? And the poet Lee Young Lee, raised in Indonesia and the US by parents born in China, helpfully reminds us that sometimes we can benefit from considering a different way of looking at time. He says, in the West, we usually think of the future lying ahead of us, and we walk forward into it, leaving the past behind. But it's the other way around for an Eastern mind. The Chinese word for the day after tomorrow is ho, meaning behind. And the word denoting the day before yesterday is actually qian, meaning in front of. And so to a Chinese mind, tomorrow, the future, is behind me, while the past lies in front of me. Therefore, we go backing up into the future, into the unknown, the what's about to be, and everything that lies before our eyes is past, happened already. And it's true that when we look up at the stars at night, many of them that appear to be there are, in fact, dead already, millions of years ago gone. But we haven't heard the news. All light is late. We're constantly looking at the immediate past, mistaking it for what's current. What we see with our outward eyes is actually over with. To get entangled with what we're seeing is to become entangled with a phantom, what's not even here anymore. Wave goodbye. Anyway, he says, everything we see is the late report, the echo of earlier invisible realities. If we are looking ahead at the past, backing into the future, we have to make the most use we can of the light that shines on from what has gone before. And this is where faith communities have always been beacons, bringing together our highest aspirations, our deepest questions, our most fervent longings, so that together we can offer some illumination to a world that is full of trouble and fear. This congregation has served for nearly 300 years as a place where hopes are gathered and fears are born and comforted. Strength is found over and over again. It has been a lighthouse, shining to offer a view, a safe harbor to those in need, as well as a warning to those headed straight for the sharp rocks. Its core purpose, our core purpose, is to shine as brightly as we can so that we can offer hope and shelter to those in need. Just as the lighthouse's job is to continue its work no matter how many boats can see it on any given day or at any given hour, no matter how deep the water is or what else is going on in the world, the aspirations and lessons of success and shortcomings in this community shine forward as both an inspiration and a warning. We can and should, my friends, trust the light within us, gathered together in community, to help us discern a way through the fog and storms of this world. To trust the light that shines still from our past, guiding us through today's tumult. So I offer you this morning some of the light you shared in your very recent past, in the forms of the qualities of spirit you said you wanted to invite in this congregation this year when we first met in September. Dozens of you named compassion, many named kindness, courage, open-heartedness, welcome, connection, serenity, joy, being present, love, hope, embracing the journey. Written on those cards where you described your intentions you wanted to make manifest this year, you described the qualities already here in this community, the yearnings of your hearts, and also, maybe not coincidentally, the qualities many attribute to the Holy One, whose nickname is God. Kay Ryan writes in her poem, Lighthouse Keeping, "Seas pleat, winds keen, fogs deepen, ships lean, no doubt, and the lighthouse keeper keeps a light for those left out. It is intimate and remote, both for the keeper and those afloat." Let us know when we are ready to be keepers, and welcome one another when we find ourselves afloat. Let us offer our cries of lament and end them in abiding trust in the light we can see before us, no matter what the future holds. Let that light guide our way. Amen. In the words of Stuart Kestenbaum, it all comes down to this. In our imperfect world, we are meant to repair and stitch together what beauty there is. Stitch it with compassion and wire. See how everything we've made gathers the light inside itself and overflows? A blessing. Go forth with that blessing to share the love that's the spirit of this congregation, and let it hold you until we meet again. The service begins when the service ends. Amen.
please visit ascboston.org for more information about this historic Unitarian Universalist congregation. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.